Welcome to this special San Antonio Satellite edition of Breast Cancer Update. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. For our December 15th Saturday night special in the city by the river, we gathered a stellar faculty of Drs. Tom Budd, Rowan Shablowski, John Forbes, Cliff Huddis, Joyce O'Shaughnessy, George Sledge, and Joe Sperano. And just to try something a little bit different, we presented to these docs a series of pre-recorded, real but de-identified cases from medical oncologists in practice. The first case was presented by Dr. Bill Reeves from Youngstown, Ohio, a 65-year-old woman who was diagnosed 3 years ago with an ERPR-positive, HER2-negative tumor with 7 positive nodes. The patient received FEC x 6 and anastrozole and now presents with rapidly deteriorating health.
The patient began to experience some abdominal complaints, consisting mainly of cramping intermittently, had some early satiety, and also lost some weight, about 10 pounds in the space of 3 months. Bone scan was negative, CAT scan of the chest was negative, but the CT of the abdomen showed the presence of multiple lesions in her liver. It was commented that the gastric contents didn't empty quickly on the scan, but that was the only abnormality.
Tumor markers?
The CEA and CA2729 were both negative at the time she was losing weight, but they were negative at her time of her diagnosis as well.
As it turns out, this case was a bit of an anomaly, but I asked Dr. Huddis to comment on treatment options and the issue of cross-trial comparison of the efficacy of various systemic therapy approaches in a patient with highly symptomatic visceral metastases. In this case, we stipulated that the first oncologist who was seeing the patient recommended paclitaxel bevacizumab.
This is a situation that we do encounter with some regularity. This is a relatively short disease-free interval. Although the tumor is ER positive, one is less enthused about first-line hormone therapy for this patient because of the relatively short progression-free interval and the very symptomatic presentation with widespread liver mets. I have to always stipulate, I assume this patient had a liver biopsy. We would always do that just to confirm her histology before moving on. So the referring doctors asked about giving paclitaxel and Bev, and the real question is how do we compare that option with all of the others? And I thought long and hard about this and decided that there was no answer. This is a real problem because if you want to be evidence-based and compare these disparate options, then what you would need, of course, is some kind of head-to-head comparison of them, and it simply isn't there. They've all been demonstrated to be reasonably well-tolerated and reasonably efficacious, but relative activity is the issue here, and I don't think that anybody's able to really put them in context. The one thing we wouldn't do is choose Q3-week paclitaxel 175. E2100 is the informative study here for the question at hand, demonstrating that the addition of bevacizumab to a 3-week out of 4 paclitaxel schedule was associated with a near doubling of progression-free survival, remarkable increase in response rate as well, and certainly a trend in favor of an improvement in overall survival, albeit one that is not statistically significant. I want to point out to you that we have non-randomized data with several of these first-line agents and several of the taxanes, albumin-bound paclitaxel, studied in a retrospective fashion along with bevacizumab, suggesting at least a reasonable response rate around 50% in this relatively small cohort. I would place this patient on weekly paclitaxel and bevacizumab, and I would leave her on that until she had progression or unacceptable toxicity. At the time of toxicity, if she was in stable condition, I would be tempted, based on our feasibility data, to leave her on the antibody and add in the aromatase inhibitor as a maintenance.
I want to start out with Joe and ask you about this clinical situation. A patient who's sick, visceral disease, needs a response, prior anthracycline adjuvant therapy.
Certainly, paclitaxel and bevacizumab would definitely be an appropriate choice and would be my choice as well. I think if Bev were not available, then this is the type of patient that I would treat with a couplet.
Which one?
You can pick any one of them. Something that includes a taxane.
Joyce, what about your approach to patients like this with prior anthracyclines but no taxanes?
I generally have been using paclitaxel, bevacizumab for these patients. I have equipoise, though, with the doublets. I use it, though, because I'm really committed to using the bevacizumab sort of up front, or if I give capecitabine first line, then I would use paclitaxel, bev second line, but I want to use it early. And so that's the main reason I'm going with the bev early.
Would it be paclitaxel, bev, or nab-bev?
I go either way on it. I think I've been using probably a little bit more nab-paclitaxel lately because we've just finished accrual to a phase two, and I've been used to using the NAB more, and it's been well tolerated. So I guess more recently, a little bit more NAB because of our phase two experience.
Tom, same clinical situation. You need a response. The patient's never had any type of chemotherapy. What are you going to be thinking?
In this patient, I would think of a taxane, and I would use bevacizumab. And I usually use paclitaxel. I think nab-paclitaxel is a perfectly, and we have safety data on it.
George, again, no prior chemotherapy at all. Patient needs a response.
Well, I think I agree with most of my colleagues. A taxane-based regimen with bevacizumab would certainly be my front choice, assuming that insurance paid for it.
Getting back to this issue of trying to tease out efficacy when you need a response, what about the patient with a prior taxane in the adjuvant setting? Relapses within a year. Cliff, how would you think that through in terms of, again, this kind of not very good situation?
Until E2100 was reported, I was very consistently choosing capecitabine as my first-line chemo for these patients who have had both an anthracycline and a taxane as adjuvant therapy. The reason we do trials is our preconceived notions really can be wrong. And one of the ones that was wrong, at least for me, was the notion that prior paclitaxel would diminish the response. In E2100, the delta gain with bevacizumab and the point estimates were really pretty much the same, George can correct me, for the group that was pretreated and the group that was not. And so if they've had more than 6 months or certainly more than a year interval from their adjuvant taxane, I'm pretty comfortable, if they're tolerant of the toxicity, of resuming it and giving the bev.
George, can you comment on the Excalibur data that you presented at ASCO and the issue of capecitabine with bevacizumab?
Sure. So Excalibur was a phase two trial, a little over 100 patients, in which women received capecitabine plus bevacizumab as first-line therapy for metastatic breast cancer. And as you'd expect, many of the patients had had prior anthracyclines and taxanes in the adjuvant setting and had as a primary endpoint progression-free survival. Capecitabine as a single agent in frontline metastatic breast cancer doesn't have a huge track record, but a couple small phase two trials had about a four-month progression-free survival. The combination of capecitabine and bevacizumab for the intent-to-treat population in the trial had a 5.7-month progression-free survival. So within the guidelines of the trial, that was considered a positive trial. Looking at it a little bit further, as Cliff mentioned, the triple-negative patients in this trial just did horribly. Their overall survival for the combination was 7.5 months, median of 7.5 months. And this raises the question of whether or not this combination in triple-negative patients is just simply an awful combination. And interestingly enough, we don't have a whole lot of data on this. Or whether or not capecitabine may not be a very good drug in triple-negative breast cancer. There will be a number of data sets that will be hopefully presented in the not-too-distant future that actually have single-agent capecitabine arms. So, for instance, the capecitabine plus-minus exabepalone trial, in which we'll be able to look at subsets to see whether or not this very interesting observation we saw in Excalibur is more generalizable.
Just to sort of keep things a little entertaining, Cliff made the point about the importance of a biopsy in this case, and it turned out to be kind of interesting. So let's see the second part of the video case presentation of this woman.
We went ahead and had a biopsy performed of the liver lesion. That was the easiest one to reach. And surprisingly, it showed a GI stromal tumor. It was CTEP positive. The stomach was evaluated with an upper GI endoscopy, and biopsy showed that that emptying was due to a mass in the wall of the stomach that was also positive for the GI stromal tumor. The patient went on to receive Gleevec at a dose of 400 milligrams a day, had remarkable improvement in her symptoms. She's now 2 years along into the Gleevec, and her most recent CAT scan indicates a marked improvement, although still disease is present in the liver.